Aerial 5.
Because the planes come in so low that we had very little warning, and it would have been a gun control situation whereby we'd have just engaged them by guesswork, punching around up, traversing left, elevating until the number one thought that we were ready and ordered fire. I did actually, we had one casualty there, got killed by this bomb. So on the all, we were very lucky that our casualty rate was quite low at Salerno. The next thing we knew that we were moving up, Naples had fallen, and we moved up through Naples and deployed on the Naples aerodrome. This was not by any means as a defence of the aerodrome in the anti-aircraft role, because across the other edge of the airfield, German patrols were quite active. It was here that we actually first time came in contact with with the Yanks. It was at dusk, and this squad of Americans came across the aerodrome as a patrol, and in the falling light, we almost mistook them for Germans because of the type of the helmet they had on. they challenged, our sentry challenged, and the password, the challenge was bread, and the reply was margarine. This is for our British purposes. The Yanks didn't seem to know anything about margarine, so for a few seconds there was a dicey situation where the British infantry opened up on them or not. We stopped in this position for about a fortnight, settled down, no ground roll firing at all. Oh no, we moved from the actual aerodrome further away into the suburbs and did actually take up the defensive role of the aerodrome. There was some night raids, but nothing to talk about. And we had our own radar in action now. We had a system of engaging from radar. The radar would put the predicting instruments on to a target, and we fired that way. But it was very limited engagements indeed. It was the first time that we'd now met up with the Italian population, because we were in our site was actually on a pony track, pony trotting track, and they were quite friendly to us. But as I say, within a couple of weeks we're on our way again, going back to support the 201 Guards Brigade in the field role.
Was there any fraternisation with the population?
Yes, but they, by this stage, the women would come along and they would do our washing for us for a price, you know. We had occupation money, lira, British printed occupation money. The rate of exchange was 400 lira to the pound. my money by this time, because of my increments through length year service, had gone up, I'd be about £5 a week. So we were quite wealthy at 400 lira to the pound. I'm pulling something like 2,000 lira.
I heard that VD was very rife in Naples, but was that later after you left?
I think that would have possibly been later. We didn't go in because we were in the now in the ACAT role anyway, which meant that you had to stand by for 24-hour day on 24-hour day manning basis. Any leave that would have been, I certainly didn't get any, and no one was thinking of any anyway, you know. But we did have women coming on at night, prostituting themselves, because again, they were pretty hard up and starving. Their food supplies were limited, you know. And I think the going rate for a woman was a tin of bully beef, like, you know. And it would be a case of in the trees sort of business, you know, which personally I wasn't interested. I'm not a goody-goody, but to go away and have a quick bang like that in the trees is not my idea, or wasn't my idea of sex anyway. But of course, by now, we had been, I'm only talking about a period of a month, and we are comparing Italy with the desert, whereby you saw no women at all. Only the old woman from a mile away, heavily covered up, following her husband's track sort of business, you know. So fraternisation did become quite a thing from then on. Myself, I had, from a fraternisation point of view, as I've said before, my brother had claimed, my brother was serving with me. He was a gun sergeant, actually. And he came along to me and said, here, he said, I've got a meal laid on tonight with my Dobie woman. Woman was doing his washing for him. So it was only a matter of a few yards away where she lived from where our gun site was. And we went away for this horrible meal, as it turned out. The first time I've ever sort of come under a spaghetti situation, you know, very heavily spiced, and I really couldn't manage it. And I had a silk scarf around my neck. We used to do this sort of thing, wear a muffler sort of thing, you know. We got used to it up the desert because of sweating and stopping the sand from going down. I quickly whipped my muffler off when she was out of the room and scooped all mine into this and wrapped it on, surreptitiously hid it away, like, you know. She came back and thought I'd enjoyed it so much and still started to offer me more, and I said, no, thank you. Yeah. And when they began to pick up a few words of Italian.
Could you tell me a bit more about your opinion of the American army as a fighting force in Italy?
Yes. Very, 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 very poor. We'd only heard of their problems in North Africa. They got a terrible beating up at the Medellin. So we were quite prepared to find them, not as we thought of ourselves as quite experienced. And there was this prejudice against them that I don't think anyone in the situation could help be but prejudice. Several of our lads' marriages have broken up in England through their wives being involved with Americans. They had far more money than I'm talking about now that our own British lads would become involved with them in North Africa. the First Army. Quite a lot of who we were meeting, because the British 45th Div had come over, the Oak Tree Division had come over from North Africa with us as part of 10 Corps and told us quite a lot about them, how their money, as opposed to ours, put things, an inflation on things. And whereas I was quite well off, most of the ordinary conscripted British lad were far less off than I was. As far as they themselves was concerned, we knew for a fact from our own experience, I myself had gone back on an ammunition. All our ammunition at Salerno had been unloaded onto the beaches, of course. The Salerno dock itself was of limited benefit to us. And I'd gone back on an ammunition detail to get ammunition. And they were actually filming the landing of Salerno, the Yanks, some 4 or 5 days after we'd done the landing, you know. Their own Army newspaper, Fifth Army newspaper, Stars and Stripes, had printed an article that was very apologetic to the British Army for the way the American papers had splashed that they had done the assault of the Salerno beaches, which they nowhere had. They'd landed in the south against no opposition whatsoever, whereas unfortunately we had landed 10 Corps smack in amongst this Panzer Div anti-invasion exercise. We were envious of them for their supplies as opposed to ours. We landed at Salerno with our desert clothing, pullover, khaki drill, with an overcoat and one blanket. We remained with this up until the December, when there was something like 3 foot of snow on the ground. And if it hadn't have been through one of the lads being evacuated to North Africa, laying on a stretcher in khaki drill and quite a high medical officer questioning him why he was dressed in khaki drill, turned around and told him that the whole unit was still with khaki drill from the desert. Our quartermaster, as a result of this, was whipped across to the Canadians over onto the Adriatic coast with his truck and collected battle dress to issue us with. And our first real contact with the Yanks in action, or not contact, we supported them at Casino, where they took quite a tanking because of the position itself, you know. But their stock didn't rate very high with us. As far as we ourselves are concerned, it was mainly from probably prejudicial conversation with our infantry, who came more in contact with them than we did, far more.
So, after Naples, where did you go then?
From Naples, as I say, from this pony ACAC position, from the pony track. We went back in the fill roll to support 201 Guards Brigade again. now, what's the... we went back to Capua again. There's a river there. I can't remember the name of the river now. and supported them from there on. I do remember the next river crossing, the Garligiano, again with the 201 Guards Brigade. And it did seem that Gascoigne, this Brigadier Gascoigne, had fulfilled his promise to us that he would keep us in support of them. It was quite extensive engagements we had there, supporting them in crossing the river. In leading up to it, we'd do quite a lot of harassing fire, whereby we'd have a program throughout the night of odd hours, odd times, not odd hours. We'd get a program, say, throughout the night, 0055, four rounds on such a bearing, such an angle, switch within a minute or so to another bearing, another angle, half a dozen rounds. This would go on throughout the night. Quite stressful for us, as much as it must have been for any German infantry. And we were obviously, our targets were told to us as being crossroads. such a position and such a position. If it should follow that we'd go into a defensive against a German attack, then of course the number of rounds would be far more extensive. And happened quite often. Until such times as they were prepared to put an attack across the river, which we would give them with heavy supporting role against. So this was at Capua, followed by the Garigliano. The Ronco was a river there. And of course the all-Italian campaign developed into crossing rivers. There were something like 13 major assaults across rivers throughout the Italian campaign, which we ourselves are continually involved with. Up until the Gustav line was at Cassino, was heavily fortified. First of all, the Yanks had a go at it, the New Zealanders, the British infantry divisions had a go at it. And at Cassino itself, we, as I say, we did support the 201 Guards Brigade. Until it, we did know that Gascoigne, Brigadier Gascoigne, got killed. and we then broke away to support various units throughout the 5th Army, as it was.
But at Cassino, can you describe the exact position which you were in?
Yes, we'd be... we'd moved that to moving from several sites along the Cassino front. Two or three sites we actually did... We were heavily camouflaged, and there's quite a lot of movement, because Jerry himself, the Lira Valley was quite wooded, and prior to any action there. He himself had gone in and they had literally cleared of trees to help themselves in defending the position. It was quite renowned as a defensive. The monastery itself, the position itself, was renowned as being an ideal defensive position. Various armies had used it in tactical exercises without troops, as an example. The Germans themselves, of course, were masters at defensive warfare. They'd used circular saws, mobile circular saws to clear it, so that you had they had complete vantage vision across the valley, so that any action positions that we occupied were continuously moving to avoid detection. Which we didn't avoid, but to avoid maximum exposure of shelling. We saw it two or three times, the casino itself, from our positions. At other occasions, we'd move because we did get quite shelled quite extensively. Fortunately, very, very few casualties. Until such time as the actual massive American fortress, flying fortress raid on it, when by now we were in position that we were going to finally, as they hoped, break the line. And of course, the actual raid on the monastery with massive aerial raid was because that they finally decided that they couldn't break the line without destroying the monastery. I think it'll always be an argument of whether the Germans were using it as OPs, but they didn't have to use it anyway. And as we all know since, that we did ourselves more ambush bombing it than we did good, because the Hermann Göring div, the parachute div, took up better defensive positions when it was destroyed than they did before. From the position that we were in when it was attacked, we were there something like a couple of weeks before there was an actual breakthrough. And then we ourselves crossed the Mad Mile, as it was known. Highway 6 went across the valley, straight to the foot of Casino itself, the town of Casino itself, and then had to turn left to continue on to Rome. And we crossed over, turned left, went to the next place we dropped into action was at Frosinone, a place called Frosinone, where he'd stopped momentarily. And then it was a case of stopping a couple of days, moving, until we arrived north of Rome. We ourselves simply shot through Rome. We didn't stop there. And our position would be something like about 10 miles north of Rome that we took up then.
In hills?
Yes, rolling hills then. And, of course, we'd gone from autumn through a winter of mud / snow. And we were now coming into quite nice weather again. Spring into summer.
Because this was the period just after D-Day in Normandy.
Yeah, because we had by now heard that June, when we took Rome, almost the same time, they invaded Northern Europe. And I think that now we were more relaxed in Italy. We knew that we were going to have, we thought that we were going to have an easier time. And if I can go back to crossing to Italy again, we had thought, because of the day before landing, or the night before landing, we'd been told officially that the Italians surrendered, and we did think that we were going to have a walkover. We knew nothing about a panzer division carrying out exercises there. In fact, an order had gone throughout the fleet of splice the main brace, and we were given a rum issue. The British Army had always had a good relationship with the British Navy. I think the British Army thought the world of the British Navy. We all knew that at some time or other throughout our history they'd got the army out of some dicey situations, as with Dunkirk. And the crew aboard simply went mad with us, gave us their issue of rum as a way of celebrating. That they thought, rather, we're going to have a rotten land and we're going to walk ashore and away for your life. We soon learned our lesson, knew different, you know, when we landed at Salerno. But by the time north of Rome, we now relaxed into knowing that things were a lot easier. And we settled down into this system of supporting various divisions, different units. And our main role became harassing. We'd take up a temporary position and carry harrison for throughout the night. It was in this summer that we ourselves had adopted a situation of firing at night to ease our own situation, which, as I said before, was quite as stressful as it was to any German trooper, being up all night, moving, just to fire a few rounds, broken sleep, that we split our gun detachments into two. Unofficially, this was unofficially, we knew that five or six of us could fire the gun quite adequately on this harassing fire rule. So that unofficially, the sergeant would have half of the detachment one night, and the bombardier would have the other half the next night.